Welcome back to Inside the Bar Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Christy Barker, a career prosecutor from the Savannah, Georgia area. We are continuing our series on the murders of J.R. and Mary Crocker at the hands of their family. For those who have been following this podcast, it should be obvious that none of these episodes would be possible without the diligence of law enforcement. Certainly nothing in the last six episodes could have been brought to light the suffering of these children, absent hours of grueling work on the part of investigators that didn't just walk away from the inconsistent claims about where Mary Crocker might be. I can assure you that those things happen all too easily. And part of what you should take away from this case is that horrible things are happening to children every day that are being overlooked or ignored. Often these things are hiding in plain sight. So it's important to highlight what went right here. The Effingham County Sheriff's Office and the investigators from the Ogeechee Judicial Circuit, who were involved in this case early on, understood the mission and kept their focus. I think a little background is warranted for those who are unfamiliar with Effingham County, Georgia, which I imagine are quite a few of you. Effingham County lies northwest and on the border of Chatham County, which is where Savannah, Georgia is, and where I spent most of my career. Sheriff Jimmy McDuffie rose through the ranks of the sheriff's office and became the elected sheriff of Effingham County in 2002. He describes how when he started out with the sheriff's office, the county was so rural and the population so low that a single patrol officer would handle the whole county on a Friday night. Crime in the county back then was primarily DUIs, domestic violence, some drugs, mostly meth, and occasionally reported child abuse or molestation. Real crime was a Savannah thing. Over time, though, Effingham County has become, at least partially, a suburban bedroom community, suburban to Savannah, Georgia. Since the early 2000s, the population has gone from approximately 37,000 residents to 75,000, and Sheriff McDuffie has responded to the infrastructure and burgeoning big city crime that has come with this expansion by strengthening criminal investigations and counter-narcotics. The rock of that structure was the lead investigator on the Crocker case, Captain Rick Daly. More on him to come. I will be spotlighting five of the major law enforcement players in this episode, but I think it is essential to talk about the importance of patrol officers in cases like this. You may be thinking that the Effingham County Sheriff's Office dropped the ball back in 2012 when Mark Wright beat J.R. so badly. Hindsight is, of course, 2020, and if they had known then what they know now, every adult in that house would have been arrested. Keep in mind, though, the limitations on law enforcement, particularly patrol officers. These are our true first responders, who we count on to have good instincts and be able to articulate their suspicions. But there are limits officers have to follow. They need probable cause to search things and make arrests. They also can't often interview a child without a parent's permission. So when officers responded to Cobblestone Circle in March of 2012, what was described to them looked like an isolated incident. Remember, Candace did not tell officers Mark beat JR as mercilessly as she described it in her 2019 interviews. Even JR was saying the beating was his fault. Officers didn't have a reason to examine JR's body beyond the pronounced injury to his face. So they arrested Mark for that and called in the experts, right? The Department of Family and Children Services. Like so many agencies in this case, from the schools to the medical and psychological providers, law enforcement relied on DFACs to truly investigate and monitor what was going on in the home. We have talked about some of the failure of that DFACs investigation and may revisit it later on, but it should be clear by now that law enforcement made the right call in arresting Mark Wright in 2012. The failure on the criminal side on that case came from the DA's office, which will be an episode all its own. Of course, we know that patrol made the right call on December 20th of 2018, rather than just ignoring the inconsistencies about Mary's location, which, yes, I have seen done before. They tried to verify whether Mary was actually in South Carolina. How easy would it have been to take it at face value that Mary was a troubled kid, or to have written this off as just some family squabble? All too often, that follow-up call is never made. Why was it different in this case? At least one element in play was the prevalence of child abuse and molestation cases, as some of the more serious cases being reported in Effingham County. The sheriff's office recognized this problem and began to focus on how to build good cases when those allegations came to light. To that end, the office had hired then Detective Abby Brown away from the Savannah Police Department's Special Victims Unit. I had known Abby to be a responsive detective from my work in Savannah, though I had not worked with her much. The Savannah Police Department, for all its failings, had developed a working training relationship with the Chatham County District Attorney's Office, which back then included weekly meetings of the corresponding special victims units from both the police department and the DA's office. Abby knew what she was looking at when she got called up on the rotation on December 20th of 2018. She understood why and how abusers make excuses for and cover up their abuse, and knew she was being lied to. She also knew she needed help. When she responded to Rosebud Place, there were four adults telling different versions of where Mary was. Remember, Mark was visiting his aunt in South Carolina when the aunt called in. There was also a disabled child old enough to be a witness, 11 at this point, that needed to be taken into DFACS care and separated from any adults who could unduly influence him. She also needed to get hold of Mark Wright to see if he could be interviewed, since his statement to his aunt had set the ball rolling. Fortunately for Abby, she had backup. Detective John Bradley's voice is one you have heard throughout this series in many of the interviews with Ellen Crocker. Detective Bradley was, in many ways, the workhorse of the Criminal Investigations Unit of the Effingham County Sheriff's Office. Reliable, consistent, and truly able to talk to citizens of Effingham County on their level, it was Detective Bradley who got Ellen Crocker to admit at least part of his darkest secrets, that his children were dead and he buried them in Kim's yard. The patience and control it took to get to that point are a picture of restraint. It took a ton of effort to know when to let Alan talk and let details slip and when to press him to tell the truth. Detective Bradley played his part just right and is, in many ways, an unsung hero in this case for really breaking it open. He also interviewed Roy Prater that night and walked Ellen through the yard, all without throwing one punch at either of these men. Abby Brown is a hero, too. The night of these arrests, she moved between talking to Kim, clearly the most practiced liar in the group, Candace, who wanted to be seen as the victim, and as moved into the next day with no break in the investigation, Mark Wright, who wanted to portray himself as a whistleblowing bystander. Through all of these interviews, you can see Abby's strength is getting people to open up to her. She gives people tons of rope to hang themselves with before letting her frustrations with their lies show. But Abby's responsibilities did not end in that first 48. The youngest child needed to be forensically interviewed. For those unfamiliar with forensic interviews of children, the techniques involved require special training to ensure that the child is not improperly influenced by the interviewer, the questions, or the environment in which the child is asked to recount their experience. Part of the goal is to figure out whether the statement the child is going to give is coached by anyone, whether that coach is a parent, a caregiver, a teacher, a counselor, or even law enforcement. It is better practice to have an objective, trained interviewer conduct the interview in a child-friendly, non-law enforcement environment. The interviewer needs to be given some basic information about the case, and the interview needs to be monitored by a detective familiar with the case to ensure that any areas that need to be followed up on are covered. In other words, it takes a lot of coordination, especially with a child in DFACS care. All of that fell on Abby twice because the child was interviewed twice. One of the biggest responsibilities that fell to Abby were the interviews of Candace Crocker, the ones she agreed to give as part of her plea agreement. For context, these occurred in 2019. Detectives had, at that point, number one, Ellen's statements from the night of his arrest, which had some details, but a lot of pointing fingers particularly fingers pointed at Kim and Mark, and even some at Candace. 2, pictures and text messages from the phones. 3, limited statements from Mark and Kim, mostly pointing fingers at Elwin. An initial statement from Roy, also pointing fingers mostly at Elwin. 4, physical evidence from the house, including kettles, speaker wire, the pool ladder, tasers, various pots, pans, paddles, computers, all of those things. But testing was not back yet. And 5, initial statements from the youngest child. All of these were things that Abby needed to know intimately before she interviewed Candace so that she could confront her with details. Candace was at this point represented by the Capitol Defender's Office, and we, of course, will talk about them some more later too, but they set up the interviews. They had also gotten Candace into some kind of therapy, which had revealed a bunch of information that they wanted to include in the interview, like lengthy discussions of Candace's childhood that she felt explained or excused her willingness to abuse these children early on, and lingering insecurities that in Candace's mind justified her ongoing violence toward these children. Abby let Candace talk about all of it without judgment, using the opportunity to gather more details that could be corroborated. Abby also followed up with the children's neighbors and school counselor, gathering objective takes on what outsiders were allowed to see. I want to make it clear, though, that when Candace Crocker was interviewed, Abby was not alone. From early on in the investigation, Sheriff McDuffie and Captain Daly wanted input from the district attorney's office. They knew they were looking at a serious case, one with what I call sprawl, and they wanted to ensure that every I was dotted and every T was crossed. At that time, the chief Effingham investigator for the DA's office was Eric Reiner, and Investigator Thomas Ron was newly hired from the Effingham County Sheriff's Office over to the DA's office. You may have heard them briefly in one of the interviews played with Elwin, one after Elwin showed the Effingham County Sheriff's where the bodies were buried. Investigator Reiner was moving toward retiring, so Investigator Ron became integral to the DA's office part of the investigation. Thomas may have been new to the DA's office when the Crocker murders came to light, but he knew the most important part about being a great investigator. Keep your eyes and ears open and your mouth shut. You don't hear Thomas speak much in these many interviews that he attended in this case, which included Elwin, Mark, Roy, Candace, and all of the inmates who came forward about what they were hearing. But for every motion hearing or trial preparation discussion years later, Thomas could remember details that were really easily overlooked. Of course, as the case dragged on and investigators in the other agencies left, Thomas's knowledge, including his understanding of electronic downloads, became more and more important. While Detective Bradley was still with the Effingham County Sheriff's Office, Abby Brown had moved to a supervisory position with a nearby agency, and her new responsibilities reduced her immediate recall of every aspect of the case. Then, through mismanagement, Thomas left the DA's office and went back to the Effingham County Sheriff's Office in 2025. Which brings us to Captain Rick Daly. I can't talk about institutional knowledge in Effingham County without talking about Rick. With a 40-year career in law enforcement, Rick Daly had been thinking about retiring in 2018. I had known Rick going way back to the 1990s when he worked at the Chatham County Police Department and then as an investigator of the Chatham County District Attorney's Office. Rick has always had a big personality and could literally charm anyone into having a conversation with him. Even back in those times, Rick lived in Effingham and was a country boy at heart. It was really no surprise when Rick left Chatham County to work for the Effingham County Sheriff's Office in the early 2000s. What was a surprise was his being wooed away to be the chief investigator for the Ogeechee Circuit Public Defender's Office. Of course, if you asked him, he would tell you that the truth is the truth and the Constitution is the Constitution. Getting things right for Rick wasn't optional. In any investigation, he didn't believe in cutting corners, regardless of his side of the aisle. In the 2010s, Rick had returned to the Effingham County Sheriff's Office to head the Criminal Investigation Division. He acted as a guiding force for his detectives on most cases, but when it came to murders, Rick always ran point. You may have gotten the impression that murders are pretty rare in Effingham County, That's true. The average is about five reported per year. Of course, that is the number reported. The rural nature of Buckingham County makes it the kind of place where an investigator like Rick was able to develop actual policies for handling remains found in the woods, in shallow graves, in burn piles, like a case we had once, or, as in this case, buried in the yard. The man had forensic anthropologists on speed dial. On murders, Rick sometimes struggled to delegate responsibilities, not because he's a perfectionist, although he is, but because he wants to know everything he can about a case and make sense of it. He wants to make sure everything will pass legal muster. With 40 years in, Rick thought he had seen it all, and then there was the Crocker case. No murder, and yes, Rick had worked child murders before, compared to the torture and starvation of these children. Thoughts of retirement were shelved once Rick saw the pictures of Mary on Elwin's phone, after Elwin consented to the search of his phone on December the 20th of 2018. And when he saw the tiny bodies of these children, Rick vowed not to retire until he could see the cases through. Even before the bodies were recovered, Rick's mind was on overdrive. Listening in on and overseeing all the initial interviews, Rick gathered details he needed for search warrants for the phones. Yes, an actual search warrant was used on all phones, including Elwin's, once they saw the picture of Mary's injuries. The home, the storage facility, the electronics, the box of items Mark mentioned in to his aunt in a jail call. While he wasn't sleeping, Rick was ensuring that the children's remains were properly handled for autopsy and later for a proper burial. He personally ensured the items recovered from the home were tested by the FBI crime lab, making sure all steps in the chain of custody were met. And Rick studied all of the phones, from pictures to text messages to the later mapping of Mark's phone location. When the youngest child said he had recorded Mary on a tablet, Rick looked everywhere for it. He ran down a Hewlett-Packard tablet connected to the IP address at the house, but after chasing rabbits from Savannah to South Carolina, was unable to find it. It was Rick who tracked down Elwin's mother, the one who remembered that Kim had talked about putting JR in the shed overnight. It was Rick who made sure that the Effingham County Sheriff's Office guys checked the trailer at Brother's Keeper, where they found repairs in the walls from the closet over the water heater and out through one of the walls, just as Candace described JR's escape route. It was Rick and Thomas running out to prisons to interview inmates. Rick understood the mission. He knew that in order to convict any of these co-conspirators on each other's statements, their statements had to be corroborated. While they didn't need to be corroborated in every detail, and their statements could corroborate each other, Rick knew that every piece of corroboration he could find mattered. He knew that this case qualified as a death penalty case under Georgia law and left no stone unturned. What made this case so hard for these detectives was that there was just so much information. In many deaths, you find remains and there's nothing else. You simply have to imagine what happened to put, say, a child in the yard. But in this case, it was all there. So, as justice for these children was entrusted to these investigators, when law enforcement turned the case over to the DA's office and the courts with every piece of evidence they could find, they entrusted the DA's office and the courts with getting these defendants in front of a jury to decide their fates. What could go wrong, right? Stay tuned and find out.